informative and engaging. Rick Munn. Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, it's Wednesday. It's still Wednesday, the 24th of April, 2024. This is TNT. I'm Rick Munn. This is Locked and Loaded. Hopefully, you're enjoying the show so far. Big shout out, actually, to someone who's been listening in during my last conversation with Basil Valentine. Shout out to Dave, independent researcher, a.k.a. biology phenom. He's feverishly covering the Scottish COVID inquiry at the minute, tirelessly posting about what's happening there, the revelations that are coming out there, and just following on from Basil and I's conversation about Big Pharma, how they claim that they're saving millions of lives with these jabs. In reality, the opposite is probably true. Dave sent me through a poster. I've reposted it on my Twitter account, but I'm going to read it out here. Scottish COVID Inquiry, Dr. Ashley Croft, epidemiologist, testifying about the COVID vaccines in a highlight reel. He says these are very high numbers of adverse event reports, far more than you would expect to see with any other type of vaccines. And in terms of efficacy or effectiveness, no evidence, zero evidence that any lives were actually saved. So as Basil and I were talking about that, Dave was reposting that up on his X account, and you can follow him at Biology Phenom on X. So if you're listening in, thanks for that, Dave. That's what I like, people listening in, supplementing what we're trying to talk about here on TNT, and there's a lot of people out there that are actually doing that. So coming up in this hour, I'm going to be talking to Jem again in just a minute. We're going to get an update on the Donaldson case and this business about these horses, these spooked horses running blood splattered through the streets of London. What happened there? Maybe we'll get a little bit more information on that. Philip Dwyer is going to be joining me at around 20 past. Philip is a citizen journalist running as a candidate in the upcoming EU elections for the Ireland First Party out of the Dublin region. Going to get an overview of what he's focusing on at the moment, what's happening in Ireland. And then Tim Hinchliffe will join me at the tail end of this hour from Colombia. Bless him, he's up early in the morning. He brews himself a big pot of the finest Colombian coffee. Yes, Colombian coffee to stimulate him in the mornings. And he's going to be coming on talking to me about all things tech and CBDC / digital ID / fintech related issues. So please stay tuned for that one. Now, before we get into the breaking news, some other things that I'm seeing here. Australia, this whole business, we heard the crazy Tasmanian devil on there during the news break, Jackie Lambie. What an absolute melter. She is ahead the ball. She's a space cadet, as we would call her over here in Northern Ireland, a bona fide astronaut. She was infamous during the scandemic years for screaming and howling like a banshee, telling us that people who didn't take their jab were a menace to society. They should be locked up. They were wicked and evil people. Well, now here she is, banging on, asking for Elon Musk to be arrested. And I'm no fan of Elon Musk by any stretch of the imagination, but they seem to have a bee in their bonnet over in Australia about our Elon at the moment. So just a few days ago, X was ordered to hide all video behind notices for all global users on an interim basis following the stabbings that happened over in Australia last week. And just this morning, Australian Federal Police Commissioner Rhys Kershaw, speaking on the Elon Musk allowing footage of the Wakeley church stabbing to remain on X, he said Australians are being bewitched by content that is on this platform, that is the X or Twitter platform, and X is a cauldron of poison and misinformation. It sounds like the opening scene from Macbeth. This guy's hamming it up so much, you know, the old witches on the moor and the hubble bubble, toil and trouble and all that business. He's making it sound like a Harry Potter movie here. He's talking about witchcraft and cauldrons and poison and misinformation. And he has the brass neck on him to do that as a member of the Australian police force and representing the Australian government. Such, what is it, old Obi-Wan Kenobi said in Star Wars New Hope when he looked at that hellhole place. He said, such a wretched hive of inhumanity I have never seen before. And believe me, he wasn't actually talking about the Australian government at the time. That was somewhere in the far-flung corners of the universe, but it has shades of Macbeth and Star Wars to it. This Rhys, what's his name, Kershaw guy. Good grief. Where do they dig these people up? You look at him, he actually looks like one of Anthony Albanese's brothers. He's got that dorky look about him. But anyway, who am I to talk? Who am I to talk and criticize how other people look? I look like a hobo. I look like I've been dragged through a hedge backwards. I look like I haven't had a shower in about 3 weeks and I don't use deodorant. But hell's bells, what you see is what you get with me. And if you don't like it, go and look at Anthony Albanese instead. But anyway, on that note, on that invitation, I'm going to pause. I'm going to inhale. I'm going to sip a little bit of H2O and welcome Gemma Cooper on to give us an update on today's breaking news on TNT.
Delivering the facts.
Source I can trust.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Cauldrons, poison, bewitched. Twitter, what do you think? Is it as bad as that, Gemma, or is this guy really going to town with the adjectives here?
Well, language is so emotive, isn't it? I mean, that's my business of my career has been language. And when you like hear those kinds of words, it does strike a reaction in you. And clearly, I think he's got a bit of a speechwriter possibly behind him there, kind of deciding what the message was going to be and then picking the appropriate language to get it across. So very clever spin. And every department, every person in the public eye, you know, pretty much does have somebody behind them telling them what to say. But yeah, you're right. Paints a picture, doesn't it? That type of language creates an image of what really is quite a boring medium. It's a screen. Yeah. Really, you know, but they're trying to demonize it, whether or not it works. Well, you know, hysteria doesn't count for much these days, does it?
I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to confess here. I love those type of headlines. I love that over the top language. I love that gung-ho style, even though it's complete bunkum what he's talking about. Fair play to whoever's behind it, their spin department, and they're trying to conjure up these ideas, again, no pun intended, with the witchcraft thing, but that's exactly what they're trying to do. I think you and I would make really good headline writers if we were poached by the Australian government, for example, or even the British government. Imagine some of the headlines we could come up with. I would love that. I would just love it.
Well, don't speak too soon. You never know. You might conjure up something. You might manifest something, Rick. Next thing you know, there's a knock on the door. God help the British government with the headlines you come up with.
Okay, but setting that to the side, following on from our first hour, actually, the Donaldson business, of course, we covered extensively in the first hour, but have there been any updates since then? Because obviously the reporting still filing out from that appearance this morning here in Newry Crown Court in Northern Ireland. So any updates on that one?
Well, it's Newry Magistrates Court, is the first port of call. Yeah, first port of call before it's referred to Crown Court, which it will be today. I doubt very much whether there'll be a referral date. There's a backlog of court cases in Northern Ireland, as you rightly said at the top of the last hour. But interestingly, Geoffrey Donaldson has had his bail conditions relaxed in the last half an hour. The court ruled that he will be able to have contact with his wife. Previous to this court appearance this morning, they weren't allowed to speak to each other or live with each other. Those conditions, it just says, has been relaxed. Now he will be able to have contact with his wife, Lady Eleanor. Still no actual details of the court proceedings. Normally with a magistrate's court appearance, it's straight up and down. He stands up, the defendant will stand up, hear the charges against them, and then the date is set for a future hearing. We haven't had any of the actual proceedings in court. What we do know is there's a lot of media there and lots of members of the public. I had a look at some of the footage as Mr. Donaldson arrived in court, and I think somebody did shout out, "Are you going to stand down as an MP?" It's a little bit muffled, but it does relate to what you said at the top of the last hour. He still is an MP for his constituency. And somebody was saying, "You still going to do that, Mr. Donaldson?" He didn't speak at all. He just went straight into court. So that's an update on that. Also, the two Premiership players have been arrested in connection with rape. There haven't been any charges so far. Both players are 19, both play for the same big league Premiership club here in the UK. That club has apparently been approached for comment. Nobody's identifying the club at the moment because the two haven't been charged. So you don't want to smear the entire team by default. It's only when charges are made if there are any charges, that those two players will be named. And of course, yes, the story of the horses in central London, five horses from the Royal Household Cavalry run up through the streets of London, causing considerable damage over the last few hours. All five horses are now with army vets. Four people are in hospital. Apparently, the cause of this, and it's what we're being told officially, is the horses got spooked near Horse Guards Parade due to some builders moving around some concrete. It's a bit of a spurious line. These horses are highly trained. They're military horses. They're more highly trained than police horses. They're used to dealing with this kind of thing. And some of the images, they've gone viral. The horses covered in blood, crashing into Mercedes cars, crashing into taxis, crashing into bicycle ramps, leaving horses' hooves prints all over the street. Very, very emotive scenes. Never seen anything like it in central London or ever in this country. So that story's going to run and run. But that's the official version, builders moving concrete around.
Okay, let's look at this story here just for a minute. I saw some of the footage. The animals were super distressed. One beautiful white horse in particular, its whole front was covered in blood. Now, you mentioned that these horses are probably as highly trained as any horse could be. And I would imagine, I'm not a horse trainer by any stretch of the imagination, but I would imagine they would be, how would you say, exposed to being spooked as part of their training. So maybe just a normal animal, if it heard a loud bang, it would react in such and such a way. But I would think for these horses in particular, maybe a loud noise or a sudden noise, maybe they're conditioned to that, maybe they're not. But a builder moving some concrete, you know, even then, what concrete blocks, you know, if you drop a concrete block, you know, it's a thud. It's a dull thud noise. It's not a loud cracking noise like a gunshot going off or like glass breaking, which would tend to spook people more than a dull thud. And of course, if it's wet concrete, you know, it's just slopping around there. So it seems a bit odd, this one. And let me say this. Don't ask me why, and I didn't follow this story when it came out, but I understand that sometime around when Kate disappeared and Charles was diagnosed with a cancer and all those globalists were dying, there was two horses, some strange sight, two horses were paraded through the streets of London, maybe a black one and a white one, I don't know, but it was symbolic in some way, shape or form. A lot of people were saying there's some kind of symbolism behind it. Now we have these five horses charging through the streets of London covered in blood. I'm getting visions of the four horsemen of the apocalypse here. You know, it's not the book of Revelation playing out, but there's probably something in that somewhere with regards to these horses on the streets of London. I don't know. Maybe I'm looking into it in too much detail. What do you think?
No, I had the same instinctual thought. I thought, what is this? It looks like some kind of symbolism, black and white horses covered in blood, running through the streets of central London. London's a deeply esoteric city. One horse was found as far away as Aldwych. One horse was running by St. Paul's Cathedral. Another horse in Victoria. They're just crazy scenes. We've never seen anything like this. And you're quite right about the training that these animals receive. I'm not sure how kind or humane the training is for police horses or army horses, but they are trained to deal with pretty much every eventuality. And as many witnesses said, Horse Guards Parade, the Royal Cavalry, Household Cavalry, they're out every day in that part of London. And it's a very populated part of London. There's a lot of tourists around there. They're used to being looked at, photographed, all kinds of things, these horses. And this is nothing like this has ever happened before. So to have that as the official version of builders moving some cement, it's a very kind of neatly packaged 3-hour breaking story that from start to finish looks like some kind of piece of symbolism. You know, that is speculation on our part, but interesting that we both saw the pictures and thought the same thing. I'm sure we won't be the only ones. If you're in the chat and you've seen it, and it'd be great to get your opinions and thoughts on these images. They're very striking. They're quite upsetting as well. Four people are in hospital. Horses are all back. Let's hope they receive some nice treatment from the vets, and that they are calmed down and looked after and cared for, especially the one that's got quite a large cut. I think that was from the horse that smashed into a Mercedes car. People were inside the car at the time. They said they couldn't believe it. They couldn't believe what was coming towards them, and it cut itself on the windscreen glass. So I hope that horse is okay. It was kind of limping a bit as it was cantering down one of the London streets. But they are extraordinary scenes, Rick. And I'm a bit with you. You know, this looks very odd. It does look very odd.
it's another weird thing that's happening. And again, it's the second horse thing that's happened on the streets of London in relation to a lot of weirdness going on within the so-called royal family. And I don't pay them that much attention. I know you don't either, but I'm just concerned about the animals right now, irrespective of what's behind it. You know, it was very distressing. And of course, anybody that was injured there, we hope they get better and that those animals are okay and they don't have to be put down. But thanks for bringing us the lowdown on that one. Anyway, Gemma, we will talk again tomorrow, all being well. And we've got to take a pause right now, take a little ad break. And when we come back at the other side, speak to Philip Dwyer from Ireland. So stay tuned for that. More to come here on TNT, Today's News Talk.
TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
Now I want to say this, and I'm going to say it just once.
This is Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, good morning and welcome back. This is TNT, Today's News Talk. I'm very happy to be joined right now by the man himself, the one and only Philip Dwyer. Philip has been on Locked and Loaded before, and we're keeping a finger on the pulse of what's happening in Ireland at the minute. Philip is a citizen journalist. He is also running as a candidate in the upcoming EU elections for the Ireland First Party, along with Derek Bligh, another fine gentleman that I've had the pleasure of talking to here on Locked and Loaded. Philip, how are you doing today? Are you well?
I'm good. Thanks for inviting me on again, Ricky. Rick, thanks a million.
It's a pleasure, my friend. And I've been, you know, since the last time we spoke, a lot of water has passed under the bridge here in Ireland. Not for the best, I might add. Varadkar has gone. Coveney has gone. Harris is in. McEntee is still in situ. You guys are now running in the Ireland First Party. So all that stuff's been happening even since the last time we spoke. And I want to start off focusing on you, not them, to begin with. Anyway, tell us a little bit about the Ireland First Party, and why should anyone even consider voting for Philip Dwyer in the upcoming EU elections? What do you bring to the table?
Well, I suppose Ireland First is a grassroots party that was started by Derek and a couple of others with the intention of putting a stop to this treatment of the Irish people as second-class citizens. It's just gone way, way beyond a joke now at this stage. The government seems to be, and the establishment seem to be, just laughing in our faces right now and for the last number of years. And it's just, they just seem to be getting worse and worse. And the more that the people are up in arms against this, the more they keep getting more fanatical about imposing these crazy immigration rules, the hate speech laws, LGBT nonsense into schools. So, I mean, it isn't difficult. I mean, when you're talking the truth, you know, people out there as well, we've found, and from knocking on doors and talking to people, that there's an awful hunger out there for the truth. So the party is a new enough party. It's grown every day, and we've announced candidates in the three areas in Ireland, Dublin, south of Ireland, and then North Midlands and West. So we've got the three candidates, Derek Bligh, Alaco McGuire, and myself, Philip Dwyer. And, you know, what we want to bring to the table here is to go into Europe, which I would regard as the belly of the beast here. here. You know, most of our problems are coming from Europe. Most of the legislation that's been enforced on us by, you know, faceless bureaucrats in Brussels is not helping the Irish people, the Irish nation. It's like a massive communist super state now at this stage, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, there's hate speech laws, there's LGBT nonsense being pushed coming from Europe. And our own politicians and government appear to be doing everything they're told by this super state, by faceless bureaucrats who are working against the interests of the Irish people. I mean, there's so much. We could be here for days, years talking about legislation in Europe that's come in that has been detrimental to Ireland. You know, you can go on and on, you know.
Well, you've been out and about, okay? Yeah, you've been out canvassing, you've been out spreading the word out there. And one thing that I've noticed is the government narrative, they're trying to paint a picture that Ireland is on the whole accepting of, you know, LGBTQ indoctrination of schools. Ireland is accepting of changes to the constitution, maybe. Ireland is accepting of an open doors policy. But of course, in the last two referenda that came out there, you know, the amount of money that was thrown behind the Yes, Yes campaign to remove the word mother from the Irish constitution and also the word family. And of course, the government got their nose severely bloodied when it come to that. It was a resounding no, no return on that. You're out in the streets. You're out there at the coal face, as it were. Generally speaking, and when you see the amount of people at the protests that you're covering, that, you know, these aren't isolated protests in Dublin city centre. These are in rural Ireland. These are way out in Galway in the west. They're way down in Cork in the south. They're in Dublin in the east, and they're, you know, up in Donegal, way up towards the north. It's the whole length and breadth of Ireland. People, it would seem to be, are not happy. And when you've been out and about, Philip, what has been the reception? People coming to you, maybe, you know, traditional Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Sinn Féiners, you know, have you been received, or are people receptive to hearing what you have to say?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question, Rick, because I've noticed a major change, I suppose, in attitudes from, you know, and I think I said this before, it's quite understandable when something like a massive direct provision centre comes into a quiet rural town and they're lumping these unknown, unvetted men into your area. And people are just finding out about this for the first time. And then when somebody like myself rocks up, and then there's this media attention that they're calling me certain names, far right, whatever, racist, and that kind of spooks people. But it's been very noticeable now in places like Newtown Mount Kennedy, which was recently kind of, as I would say, attacked by riot police there to remove to peaceful protesters. These people have never had any interaction with the Gardaí or the police before. And it was very traumatizing for these people. I had a grown man ring me from the Newtown Mount Kennedy the day that this assault happened with the Gardaí, the police. And he resorted to tears. I mean, he just couldn't get a hold of what had happened to him, you know, psychologically, that the police and the state that he had put his faith in for all his life had done this to his community. So this is the effect it's having on communities. And then there's other towns like Ross Grey, which kind of went kind of viral as well. They were, you know, manhandled by riot squad as well. The same thing with people down there. But there's this sea change happening. I'm hearing back reports from people that have regretted that they might have treated me badly or disrespectfully down there. They're saying now that you're more than welcome to come down and cover what's going on in our area if you want to, and that. So it is getting through. And they just can't believe. I mean, I suppose, you know, these communities are the length and breadth of the country. These communities just can't believe what the state are doing. I mean, it's as a blind man and a galloping horse now can see that the people now are against this unwanted migration that's been foisted upon us. They see now that it's a scam, but yet the government, these people, elected representatives, are doubling down. They're going into the trying to opt into the European EU migration pact, which will supposedly bring another 30,000 migrants a year into Ireland, you know, masquerading as so-called refugees, asylum seekers. And if we opt into this, the people won't have a say in this whatsoever. So it's a major, major piece of legislation that they're trying to opt into.
It is. I want to talk about that migration pact. I want to talk about Harris, since he's took over as Taoiseach. You know, he had an opportunity there to reshuffle the deck a little bit, to get rid of obviously failing ministers, for example, Helen McEntee in particular. I think she's the scourge of Ireland. That woman is an absolute menace to society. And incompetent beyond words. I mean, like, I have a real bee in my bonnet about Helen McEntee in particular. She didn't even get moved out of the position of Justice Minister. You know, he could have stuck her into another position because, I mean, like, there's no way he has any faith in her. You know, and what he actually said was, I think, Philip, was he wasn't going to move her in case it looked like he was bowing down to pressure from the far right. So in other words, what he said was, I know she's crap, I know she sucks, I know she's useless, but just so I can save a little bit of face and I don't want to take a step back to appease the like of Philip Dwyer and Rick Munn and TNT Radio, we're going to keep this menace to society in post. That's the mentality. That's the mentality of the Irish government that we're dealing with at the minute. So let's look at that when we come back at the other side of this little headline break here on TNT. We'll be back in 30 seconds. Don't go away.
What brings you here?
News entirely.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with your TNT headlines. The war on censorship has intensified in Australia, where ex-boss Elon Musk has vowed to fight for the rights of the country's citizens. Meanwhile, the public feud has propelled X to the top of the charts to become the most downloaded news app in Australia, as more people there turn to the site for the truth. And there's anger brewing in America after a Republican was ordered to delete a video of his ex-account showing Democrats waving Ukrainian flags in the halls of Congress.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Okay, Philip, let's look at some of the things. You mentioned the doubling down, so the Irish government doubling down in certain what I would call losing positions by far and away. They're damaging themselves with some of the policies that they're trying to foist upon the Irish people. But rather than read the room, as they say, they're doubling down on it. One of which in particular, we've talked about this in the past, it's been around for a while, is another one of McEntee's babies, which is the hate speech law that she wants to try and bring in and make thought crime a real thing. In Ireland, obviously, no real appetite for that, no real take up for that one. But one of the first things that Harris said when he came in as the new Taoiseach is, he says, no, I'm still going to press ahead with that. Even though, when if you've been watching what's happening in Scotland, this kicked in on the 1st of April in Scotland, their new hate crime laws, you know, they've been inundated with people actually, and most of the complaints have been against Humza Yousaf, the First Minister, saying he's a racist, he hates white people. Wouldn't it be ironic if McEntee punted through the hate speech law and the Gardaí were inundated with complaints about her, thousands of complaints about her, saying she's a treacherous woman and she has the best interests of everyone but the Irish people at heart? Wouldn't that be ironic if that was to happen?
Yeah, I agreed. And it's like, even myself, if I was to lodge a complaint for every amount of hate that was directed towards me, I'd probably be able to go into the thousands of complaints just as one person on my own. So absolutely ludicrous. And it kind of makes you wonder when the likes of Harris now, it's his short little reign that he's going to have as Taoiseach, he's still adamant that he wants to get this hate speech legislation passed before he calls for the next general election. It looks to me like, is he getting some kind of financial reward? Is he getting some kind of reward for this when he clearly knows that the country has rejected it, the people have rejected it, and it's like the detachment from reality is unbelievable. And he's trying to sell this, you know, this pup to the Irish people still. Helen McEntee not removing her from the position, trying to make out that she's doing a wonderful job here. Please show me anything wonderful that she's done other than destroy our nation. Bringing in like making citizens out of undocumented people here that have been here for a few years, the hate speech laws, the unvetted men coming from across the border from Northern Ireland, 80%. She just admitted it there yesterday in the Dáil inquiry, accounts to the account commission or whatever. But it's like she just sits there as if there's no accountability for this, there's no responsibility for this, and this is the wonderful job we've been told to do. Now, my opinion is that she's still there because nobody else will take the job. It's a poison chalice. You know, and it's, and again, as I keep saying, as long as I have breath in my body, I will pursue to bring these people to justice in front of a court of their peers. And eventually, hopefully, these people will be, you know, hopefully jailed for their crimes against the Irish people, you know.
You would love to see that, my friend. And I mean, like, to quote Harris there yesterday, the day before yesterday, in his words, he said, "I've made a decision." He said that the hate speech bill will pass the government before the next election, saying that it would be very irresponsible not to do it. That sounds like the statement of a man that is completely detached from reality or on the payroll of some globalist paymaster. I don't know. I don't have any evidence of that, but it's certainly not the words of a right-thinking man. And McEntee as well, she's currently having to give an account of herself. She's really getting it in the neck at the minute by various people that are questioning on the Joint Committee for Justice here. And just yesterday again, McEntee, quote, says that migrants with false documents who mislead authorities can still apply for asylum in Ireland. So she's admitting that people with forged documents that are misleading the Irish government are still welcome to apply for asylum in Ireland. And she said, and this is her words, this is a deranged woman here we're talking about. And she said, "It's often said to me, if someone has a false document, they should be locked up and sent away. But these are desperate people." That's her justification for opening the floodgates and letting God knows who into Ireland at the minute, Philip. And as you also rightly pointed out yesterday, it came in, 80% of them are piling in through the north. They're passing me on their way down to you in Dublin.
Yeah, so they're passing through a safe country as regards, you know, the UN protocol on asylum seeking. So, yeah, I mean, she's just, I suppose, she's like an NGO. She's like a political activist, pro-migration. She's like someone who works for the Refugee Council. You know, that she's just there to make life easier for illegal immigrants to come into the country with total disregard for her position as Minister for Justice. Like, that is her job, to keep the Irish people as secure as possible in their own land. And she's talking about waving on people who are misleading the authorities, the immigration police and border control people. It's just, you just couldn't make this up. And every day, like since I spoke to you last, we have the referendum result. And I think I said that I expected it to be a no, but I didn't expect it to be this overwhelming no. And it was the... I suppose the message was sent there to the Irish government that the people are sick of you now. We don't want you. It was a protest vote as well as a vote against the actual legislation that they were trying to propose. So, I mean, it's like we just can't make this up anymore, our government. They're so out of control. They're so incompetent. They can't be that incompetent. It has to be more bad than mad, in my opinion.
I'm looking here at some of the other, you know, I'm looking at your Twitter feed just as you're talking here, just picking up other pieces of stories before we can finish. And Patrice Johnson, she's a great girl as well. She said the most dangerous man ever to be in office for Ireland is Roderick O'Gorman, talking about plans to streamline. So it's a tragic state of affairs when I can actually have an argument with Patrice that I think the most dangerous person in Ireland is Helen McEntee, and she could come on and make an equally good case to say, well, Rick, actually, I think it's Roderick O'Gorman. And you could come on and say, well, actually, I think it's Simon Harris or God knows who from that rogues gallery. Has there ever been such a collection of ghouls in charge of Ireland than at this point in history, Philip, just as we round this one up? Has there ever been a situation like this before?
No, not in my opinion. I mean, they're doing more damage to Ireland than Cromwell, you know, and it's because the plantation, we call it here. I mean, the plantation of Ulster was a couple of 100,000 people. They've done that in 1 year. In 2023, they brought in 250,000 people into the country in 1 year. So, you know, and let's not forget the other Simon Coveney, is a real snake in the grass. He's one of the rats that jumped the sinking ship, and Leo Varadkar. You know, all these people now are getting out, I think, while the going is good. And they've left the poison chalice then to Simon Harris. But I mean, it's a tight race between O'Gorman, Roderick O'Gorman, and Helen McEntee, who's the worst and most damaging individual to affect Ireland in the recent years. Definitely, it's a tight one. It's a close one.
Oh, and we haven't even mentioned Paul Murphy. I tell you what, we'd need about a four.
Ricky, we let him try to figure out what his child is, a boy or a girl. You know, he doesn't know.
I tell you what.
You know, his son, he doesn't know what his son is.
He doesn't know. But that's another guy. And he's been programmed. They've changed his hard drive and it's all far right, far right, far right. If you listen to this guy talk, literally every third and fourth word is far right. He just can't stop talking. I think if he went into his local fish and chip shop, Philip, and they asked him what he wanted, he said, I'll have a far right fish supper with far right ketchup and far right salt and vinegar, please. Thank you very much. The man is obsessed with the far right. But then again, that's another thing that Mac and T can't define, along with a woman and hate. They can't even define what these terms are, yet they're throwing them around left, right, and center. Philip, it's been an absolute blast talking to you this morning, but we've got to call time in this one. Please check him out on Twitter or X at Philip Dwyer, D-W-Y-E-R underscore M-O-I. Show him some love and support in his upcoming campaign to be elected in the EU elections for Ireland First, the Ireland First Party. And the best of luck to you, mate. And I'm sure we'll talk again sooner rather than later. And whatever you're off to do now, have a good one, have a productive one. Knock them doors and knock them scumbags out of power in the Dáil. That's all I have to say to you this morning. So big thanks to you for that one, Philip. Lovely to see and talk to you again. So we've got to take a break now. And then Tim Hinchliffe is joining me from Colombia to talk about shenanigans down in South America. So don't go away. Stay tuned for more here on TNT, today's news talk.
Anticipate potential delays for the morning commute. In other news, a recent government report on prescription drug pricing points to corporate
Freedom of the press is about your right to know.
What are you talking about, man? Look at his stats.
It's about your right to be informed. Your right to access all types of information keeps us free as a nation.
No.
Today, there are real threats to press freedom. And your right to know about the world around us.
Look.
Some threats are obvious, some are easy to miss, but they all put our way of life at risk. We must defend against all of these threats, no matter what kind of news is important to you.
Justified putting American troops in harm's way?
That's a great question.
We must protect our right to know before it's too late. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
Hi. I'm your retirement fear. But don't be scared. You're still in pre-retirement.
Does that mean I have more time to plan?
Precisely. Here, this is pretirement.org.
Retirement savings options? Potential tax breaks?
Boom.
This isn't scary. I'm doing it.
You got this.
Visit thisispretirement.org for free resources to help you customize your action plan.
You're with Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio. TNT.
Yes, you better believe it. It's Wednesday, the 24th of April, 2024. I'm Rick Munn, and I'm joined all the way from the Southern Hemisphere by the one and only, the myth, the legend himself, Mr. Tim Hinchliffe, who is the editor and the founder, I suppose, and the driving force behind the wonderful Sociable, which you can find at sociable.co. Tim, how are you doing this morning? How was that for an intro? Did you like that, by the way?
Loved it. Thank you. Yeah, it's a beautiful morning here in the Colombian countryside. The cocks are a-crowing. The mist is sweeping majestically across the mountains. I've got my pipe and my Colombian coffee and locked and loaded. Just one little thing about the intro. Not the founder. I'm the editor, not the founder. The Sociable was actually founded in Ireland. And that's what had its origins. And it actually won a couple of awards. I think he used to cover tech from an Irish perspective.
Oh, an Irish perspective. Eh? So how did it end up in Colombia and under your direction then, if it originated in Ireland? What skullduggery had to happen for that to come to pass?
Well, it's part of the publication's part of a media incubator here called Espacio, and we acquired it in 2015. So so I've been at it for just almost 10 years, like 9 years now. Yeah. So that's how I got here.
A media incubator. I love guests on this show because they always introduce me to new terms and expressions, and I haven't heard that one before. Media incubator. I'm not sure how I feel about that, Tim. I'm not going to lie. I'm not sure if that thrills me or terrifies me, but it's quite an expression, a media incubator. But either way, the spawn of this media incubation is your good self, and you've been laboring away in this for at least the last 10 years. I want to get into some stuff that you've been talking about and writing about very prolifically over the last month or so, one of which is a piece that you put up here to do with predictive government. Predictive government is the key to GovTech utopia, said a Saudi official to the IMF. Predictive government, what new fresh hell is this?
Well, this is coming. This was during the IMF spring meetings this past week. And so this was coming from this official from Saudi Arabia, Hisham Abdul Malik Al Sheikh. And Saudi Arabia, it's not a democracy. It's not a republic. It's an absolute monarchy. And so what they're trying to do is say, we need to know what our citizens want and need. We need to have predictive government. In other countries, other nations, you'd put that to a vote, but no, not there. What this kind of predictive government services is trying to figure out what pretty much everything about you, knowing everything about you. So, and what they do is they send little gentle nudges, or I don't know if they're gentle or not. So the example he gave is that if your family is blessed with a child, then immediately the Ministry of Health needs to start sending reminders for vaccination. Once they turn 4 or 5, the Ministry of Education will say, hey, it's time to go to preschool. We know where you live. This is where you can, these are schools around you, and so on and so on. So these are like predictive services, which they think are a great idea. And this was on a panel about sharing best practices with the world. And this, they want to take Saudi Arabia's example from this. And so this is a predictive government is something that you're just going to get, if during the during lockdowns, if you get that nudge, hey, it's time to go get vaccinated. Hey, you're next to someone who's got this. Hey, you're doing this. You shouldn't be here. You're outside this radius or whatever. They can turn into a nightmare really quickly.
Okay. Two things I'm going to pick up on from some of the things that you've just said there. Number one, Saudi Arabia. Nobody really is paying a lot of attention to what's going on in Saudi Arabia, at least in terms of this type of business, this linking in with the IMF, the International Monetary Fund. When people think about, the WEF or, globalism, they think about Davos being the epicenter for that. Every year, February, they all get together there, they all fly in, they have their WEF meetings, then they go back into the world, they do their thing. But this stuff is relentless, Tim. It would be very foolish to think that there's really only one big push for this movement forward every year. This is going on a monthly basis right across the world. And, I think with everything else that's going on in the world, a lot of people have taken their eye off the ball with these types of developments. So, Saudi Arabia, IMF, and to quote this guy, going into the next phase of predictive government, the government needs to know what it is that you want or need in the near future. Do we not see things like that with loyalty cards in supermarkets, for example? You get a QR code for your local, you don't have Tesco where you are, but where we are, you can have a QR code on a key ring. And when you scan your shopping in there, it notes what you've bought. Then you get rewards sent out in the post, discounts off the biscuits that you buy, the cat food that you might buy, the Colombian coffee brand that you might buy. Are they not already easing us into this gently, and then of course with the test and trace apps that you mentioned as well in the last few years, are we not slowly being ushered into this type of setup anyway?
Yeah, well, it's funny you mention that because here we have a store called D1, Day Uno, and it's a lot like Aldi's or whatever. And every time I go in there at checkout, the cashier asks for my ID number, a national ID number that I have here. And I always just say, really? Well, why do you need that? It's like, so we can send you like all this. And I go, no. And so every time but they ask that of every single person, numero de cédula, your ID number. And I just go, no, gracias. Because it's like, I don't want that data. So I don't sign up for anything. I don't give anyone that number. I don't give them my email or anything like that, just because they're just going to spam me with crap. And then also that information can end up to the government as well, because there are stores that have asked me for that. And I asked them why. And they said it's not just for their own keeping. They send it to the tax authorities. So the revenue authorities here in Colombia. So I'm like, no, thank you. And also to mention, expand on Saudi Arabia. Yeah, that's one. It's been under my radar as well. Because I've a lot of things going on with the World Economic Forum, especially they go to the United Arab Emirates a lot. But at the end of this month, in 4 days, They're holding, the World Economic Forum is holding a special meeting on global collaboration, growth, and energy for development in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. So that's going to, and they've got all, yeah, it's on their website, their events. They got the program all lined out, and the head of the IMF is going to be there as well speaking. So that's coming. That's going to be, yeah, just in a couple of days.
So that's Saudi again. And that's my point, that I didn't realize that was upcoming, but there you go. It's the same location and it's off the radar. I think there's a lot of stuff going on off the radar, Tim, that people are being distracted by some of the bigger things that are happening, but there's this relentless push going on behind the scenes. Now, you and I have been talking about this type of business for probably just over 2 years now. You were on Locked and Loaded right from the get-go. We talked about the same type of stuff from the get-go. Now, let me ask you this question. Since then, I did a little podcast with a guy yesterday. It wasn't anything to do with TNT, but he was asking me, so, you know, you've been saying this for a long time. Do you think, have you changed your mind? I said, well, look at the last time we spoke. Since the last time we spoke, which was, with this guy's case, September of 2022, I said, everything I talked about then has got worse. Okay. Nothing has improved. It's got worse. Now, I don't want to be a pessimist here. I want to be a realist here, but all the stuff that we've been talking about that we fielded the ideas for, this, you know, push towards a CBDC, push towards e-currencies, push towards digital IDs, push towards more restriction and censorship. We're not at the end yet. We're not at the final stages, but the push is still pretty damn relentless. There's been no backing down in any of those issues by any of these governments at all, really, has there?
No, I mean, just look at Australia right now. You know, I'm not the biggest fan of Musk and X and everything, but just they're calling to censor that post of the stabbing for the whole world. They want to, you know, not just Australia. And that, and that who was it, the e-safety commissioner or another one of the MPs or someone just calling for his arrest. And that, it's just madness. And she was one of the ones that was back during lockdowns, was just adamant and wanting to lock people up like crazy. So it's really authoritarian there. And everything, everything is becoming into fruition that we were talking about before, and it's getting worse. And even back in 2020, when I was starting to write about some more of this, you know, the totalitarian technocratic takeovers here, I got a lot of pushback on that back then. And then it's interesting to see that a couple, you know, a year later, 2 years later, 3 years later, four, people start looking back at those stories and going, oh yeah, he was right. So it's like, all right, so now what we're saying right now, look ahead. This is coming. Yeah.
I think that's the most important thing here. We'll have to be reflect and see, well, have things progressed or got better or remained the same? You know, constantly assess that, but also you got to keep looking forward to the future as well, because, you know, the move, we haven't got to the end game yet, but they're trying to maneuver the, it's like a chess game. This is like the mid game we're at now. We've had the opening. Now we're having the development of the pieces in the mid game before they push towards the end game. And again, two more people that maybe folk aren't even aware exist, and India being another place that a lot of push is going on toward digital ID. This is another post from Sociable, by the way, and you can check that out. Their website is just simply sociable.co. But this is a piece here. The Finternet will merge into digital public infrastructure where anonymity is abolished, money is programmable, and citizens are coerced into compliance. This is not Saudi Arabia we're talking about here. We're talking about India's digital ID architect, Nandan Nilekani, who probably no one has a clue who that is, and also the Bank for International Settlements, which probably people don't even know exists either. General Manager Augustin Karstens proposes creating the Finternet. Well, again, what fresh hell is this?
Well, yeah, the Finternet is something they introduced on April 15th in the Bank for International Settlements in a paper, in a report, and it was co-written by those two people that you just mentioned. And so what they see it as being is the Finternet is a vision for the future financial system, which is multiple financial ecosystems interconnected with each other, like the internet, and unified ledgers are how they could bring this all together, programmable unified ledgers. So it brings in digital identity systems, brings in central bank digital currencies, and all of this feeds into digital public infrastructure. This is something that Nandan Nilekani, he was also the chairman and co-founder of Infosys, on top of India's Aadhaar digital ID systems. And so what the digital public infrastructure that is digital identity, that is fast payment systems and massive data exchanges. So the Finternet fits right into the fast payment systems, but it's kind of like a hologram in that the whole is encoded in every little bit, because the Finternet also goes into the digital ID system. It also takes advantage of the massive data sharing. And so what they're having on these, how it works is the central bank issues a wholesale CBDC to the, and then the commercial banks have what you call a retail CBDC. The wholesale CBDC is not to be programmed. That Christine Lagarde came out and said that. Augustine Karstens alluded to it in his presentation of the Finterverse or Finternet. I keep saying Finterverse a lot because I think that's coming along the lines as well. And so what's going to happen is that the once it gets to us, the plebs, that's, you know, from the commercial banks, they can program the money any way they want, put restrictions, expiry dates, geofencing, all that sort of thing. So Nandan Nilekani, he's been at this for a long time. He even said at last year's spring meetings at the IMF that what are the tools of the new world? Everyone needs a digital ID. Everyone needs a bank account. Everyone needs a smartphone. Then everything else can be built on that. So then you get the digital public infrastructure. You get the Finternet going into that. And it's just complete surveillance control of your life, basically.
And of course, you know, we're mentioning India here again. That's not somewhere that's normally discussed as, you know, part of these New World Order type moves. But, you know, nowhere is really exempt because, you know, there's a guy, I'm sure you know, Nick Corbishley. He focuses on writing about stuff happening in Latin America, South America predominantly, although he's based in Spain. You know, he's been writing about this extensively as well as yourself. You know, when he comes on and he talks about this stuff, he wrote a book called Scanned about what the 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago. And I said, man, you need to like revise that book. It's totally out of date now because, you know, 3 years have passed and things have moved on so much. We had in, do you remember in Ukraine, they had an app, what was it? The Dura app?
Yeah.
Something, what was it called?
Dia.
The Dia app. Yeah, do you remember?
Yeah.
The Dia app, yeah. The Dia app, but that was to do with payments that were being made to Ukrainians to help resettle them in the event of, you know, Russian attack. But you could only get those payments if you signed up to the governmental Dia app, and then the payments were actually made on a transactional basis. So a lot of people aren't aware of that one either. Nigeria tried to move towards removing cash from their society not so long ago as well. They're experimenting all over Africa with different things. So I think we need to be conscious that this isn't located, or the epicenters for these experiments are not just in one place, it's right across the world and Australia as well. Tim, there's a massive push on at the minute there to get people onto digital IDs in Australia at the moment, as well as the ongoing censorship. And of course, Musk, who I'm no fan of either, you know, he in his own words, when he bought Twitter or X, he said, it's an accelerant, and I'm quoting him from memory here, and I think I'm right because I've said it so many times. He said, my purchase of Twitter was an accelerant to the development of the X app. And of course, it's now called X, but he wants to model that on the Chinese WeChat app or whatever it's called, which everything happens there. All transactions happen there. All your financial transactions happen there. It's like PayPal, Twitter, Facebook, your bank, all rolled into one. So there's a convergence on the horizon, my friend, I think we need to be very conscious of.
Yeah, and it's like, it's almost the illusion of choice. I don't know if it is, but or it's at least pitting two the narrative is like pitting two forces against each other, but they're equally as bad. What they're all going for is supremacy over this whole thing. And you know, it's like, as you said, the financial stuff, but it's all, you know, communications as well. And he's got Starlink to get the you know, beaming down internet as well. So yeah, he wants that, all that to get everyone connected, which is just what the globalists want to do. We need to provide these as a service. Everyone should have the right to be connected and participate in the digital society. Well, that's because they want to get you locked into the system and then just drain you of all the data and then manipulate and coerce and control you like a little virtual voodoo doll.
Yeah, and that's not even to mention his finger in the EV market pie as well. And of course, Neuralink, the old brain chipping he wants to make the blind see and the lame walk. Of course, he doesn't have any other nefarious intentions behind that one at all. Let's just say all the monkeys died horribly in the experimental phase, but he's moved on to the human phase of that one too. So yeah, hard to keep up with all this, but always nice to get your updated perspective on things. We're only able to reference two pieces here this morning because of time issues, but please, if you can, check out the Sociable website, sociable.co, and also on X or Twitter, it's at The Sociable, and Tim's own personal page as well, by the way, which I recommend that you follow, is at Tim Hinchcliffe, and I think I'm the only person that says your name right. Most people out of C, they call you Tim Hinchcliffe. It's not Cliff, it's Liff. So it's Tim Hinchcliffe. Follow him on there on the X platform and show him some love and support down there in Colombia. So I don't know what you're planning for the rest of the day. I would imagine you'll get out there, you'll smoke some of that pipe, you'll have another sip of coffee, you'll take in some of that lovely Colombian mountain air and the beautiful scenery, and then you'll start feverishly typing about some demonic shenanigans that's going on in the world somewhere today. But whatever you're going to do, Tim, I hope it's nice, I hope it's uplifting, I hope you're blessed, I hope you have a lovely day, and I just want to say thank you from the bottom of my little Irish heart for you coming on the show today. I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much. I need to describe exactly what I'm going to do. Just write about these nefarious shenanigans, smoke the pipe, and see what happens.
Well, I'm going to do all that too, except for smoking the pipe. But I will be back on here tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. UK time. So please stay tuned for more here today on TNT Today's News.